Welcome back. On our live line is the managing editor of the Indianapolis Business Journal, Corey Scooten. Back in November, they did a massive story about problems with bulk land bank sales in lopsided deals with nonprofits that may have, you know, led to this morning's raid by the feds and arrest. Corey, welcome. First of all, congratulations on the journalism that IBJ has been doing on these kinds of public corruption stories.
Well, thanks for so much for the compliment and for having me on today. And certainly, we always look forward to talking about some of our work on your air.
Walk our listeners through exactly what this mess was at the land bank.
Well, the land bank is set up to dispose of vacant and or tax delinquent properties. Basically, the properties that either the residents who live there rented the place that have abandoned, the lenders have abandoned. No one in that private sector saw value in the property anymore. They're tax delinquent, so they wind up with the city. And so the city's land bank, the goal of it is to return those properties to productive use, either with a nonprofit organization, a community development corporation that could fix them up, put a renter in there, perhaps sell them to an eventual owner, and or a private investor that could do some of the same things. That's how it should be working. That's how it's supposed to be working.
When I first read this story back in November, I was struck with the fact that there was no rule against a nonprofit getting the property and then flipping it at a profit right away, like you were watching some show on the House and Garden or the Do-It-Yourself Network.
Absolutely. It was shocking to me, too, as I was reporting the story and as I found out. Particularly, our story looked at a deal for 154 homes.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say homes, some of those were apartment buildings with multiple units that sold for $1,000 a piece, a total of $154,000.
Mm.
You know, the cost of maybe one or two homes, typically, you get 154 of them, and this organization immediately flipped them to private investors for a multi-million dollar profit. And those investors went on to make even more money. So you can see the loophole is sitting out there, and people were going to try to take advantage of it, and it looks like, based on what happened today, that some people have been.
After you wrote the story in November, did you get any kind of feedback that the feds were really looking into this?
No, frankly not. I looked into the specific deal that we wrote about, which was 154. It was the largest such transaction, but there were a lot of smaller ones here and there.
Mm-hmm.
There have been, you know, a couple of thousand properties that have been through the land bank. Many of them have been torn down as nuisance properties. Others have been sold to, as I mentioned earlier, community development corporations that really they're the purpose of this law of allowing nonprofits is to get them in community development corporation hands. But basically, it's a loophole that others tried to exploit. To get back to your question, though, no, I did not know that the feds were also looking into it.
So when you got the tip this morning that the legendary Tim Durham FBI van had pulled up to the front of the city-county building, and knowing IBJ and the stories you all did about fair finance and the shock that everybody had to know that the FBI actually had a van, what was your reaction?
Well, I headed out there and checked it out, and certainly you don't, you bring that van out there for a practical purpose to take away evidence, but it's not just for a practical purpose. I mean, these agents could drive their streetcars and carry the evidence to the cars. It's also sending a message, and it's most likely one that was heard loud and clear in that building this morning. As these public employees arrive for work, there's an FBI van and agents with their FBI jackets. Heading into the building and heading into to search a particular office in the building, so I think they see Joe Hogsett, your previous guest, sees a deterrent value to having searches like that. Certainly, they're looking for evidence first and foremost, but it also sends a message.
We were talking earlier, and somebody said that there had been some efforts at legislation trying to, with the land bank, if a nonprofit got it, they had to hold on to the property for a number of years. Have you heard of that? Was there an effort in the legislature?
There was some conversation. I'm not sure where that bill wound up. It did not get passed into law. There have also been some local efforts to kind of build a different structure for a land bank. And at a minimum to have some sort of disclosure requirements, so that if a a nonprofit group wanted to purchase some properties, they at least had to disclose if they were getting financing from private investors, if they eventually plan to sell them to private investors, who those investors were, because the city certainly has an interest in making sure that if there's going to be, if these are going to be returned to productive use, that they're cleaned up and they're good landlords. They're not necessarily out of state absentee folks. So there's certainly an interest to it, but it hasn't gone anywhere. Maybe this action today will spark some new legislation.
Were you surprised that income tax evasion is not part of the charges, or is that down the road? Because if all of a sudden you've made some money off these deals, you're supposed to tell the IRS.
Well, that may be a part of it down the road. It's not currently, although there is a forfeiture element to it. They're going after the cars that are owned by a couple of the individuals that are charged in the case.
One final thing, and this is what happens when I have gray hair, and I've kind of called some elders in the community, because I believe this is, and I mentioned it with the U.S. attorney, that this is the first time that we've had a federal investigation involving a direct agency of city government in the Unigov era. If you go look back, the Dick Lugar days, the scandal that involved the IPD back in the day, that was local prosecution. There never was, any kind of scandal involving a direct city agency under Hudnut, under Goldsmith, under Peterson. That says something on several levels, that this is a first.
Well, it certainly is a priority of the current U.S. attorney in town. And one thing he was asked in the press conference this afternoon whether the city or city officials on the 25th floor were informed of this, and their answer was simple, that not that they hadn't cooperated, but that to do this kind of investigation, you can't inform them. You have to see where it goes and see who's involved, and certainly based on the allegations that have come forward in the indictment, this grand jury indictment unsealed this afternoon, it's some pretty shocking improprieties if these indeed are the case and are proven so in a court of law, and who knows where it's going from here.
We're talking with Corey Schuetten, with the managing editor of IBJ. They broke this story on alleged improprieties in the land bank back in November. It's 2:43. Are you surprised we've gotten no statement yet from the mayor's office?
I'm waiting for it right now. I've been sending some emails with the mayor's office and haven't heard anything back yet. It does seem somewhat unusual, but they may just be taking their time looking over the materials and making sure they're taking the action as appropriate. Keep in mind that it's two city employees who are now facing these very serious wire fraud and bribery charges. So they may have some administrative action in terms of their employment. That's speculation at this point, but certainly they may be trying to pull together a number of issues before sending out a statement.
I don't know. My cynical audience may be thinking he's waiting till 3 o'clock till I get off the air, then he'll issue the statement. Anyway, Corey Schuetten, the managing editor of the Indianapolis Business Journal, there, published every Friday and always online, and published starting on the weekend in print, wherever great newspapers are sold. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, thanks so much. And it's IBJ.com.
Catch up on the
story.
Yeah, because that's how I found out this morning, going to IBJ.com, just trying to see what the overnight business stories, and there's the FBI van. Oh, that's a classic picture. Thank you very, very much. 239-1310, 239-1310, Cameron Riddle, who was down at the press conference, now back is in studio, and we're looking at the actual indictment, the general allegations. This is a 12-page indictment, and give us about an hour, hour and a half, and it'll be posted on our website, praiseindy.com. Your sense of all this?
Well, we tried to talk when we were back down there, and we talked about the media response to this, and as you've been saying just over the past couple of minutes, this is the first time something like this has happened in Unigov, which was founded in 1970, in 43 years. This is a big deal. This is the first time at least someone's been caught down at the city-county building in some kind of riffraff. And when I was talking with Abdul, we noted how many people were there from the media. This wasn't an event where just some of us or some from this side or that side were there, but we were all there. This is a big story.
The fact that the two principals involved in this case, the two city employees, are individuals in their mid to late 20s. That's kind of unusual in these kind of alleged public corruption cases where the alleged lead people in this are that young. And then you add into that young African-American males.
Are you alluding to something above that, Amos?
I don't know. It's unusual.
I'd agree.
And I'm asking you as a young African-American male, how do you react to it? Because usually when you think these kind of public corruption cases, it's usually middle-aged or older city employees.
Which is why I say someone of that age couldn't just walk in, you know, day one and start some corruption. So there's got to be a little bit more to this. Am I right?
We don't know. I think
it seems that way.
And the fact that this is an ongoing investigation and the U.S. attorney, in my questioning, he didn't take the bait, which I knew he wasn't going to do, because it is kind of unusual that they had enough evidence to indict and charge these individuals today. And at the same time, they were executing search warrants. Which means, wait a minute, you had enough to get them today before the search warrant. You're looking for something
else. They're still looking. And as you point out the ages of the people who are in their late 20s, there's also a 57-year-old involved.
Yeah.
So if it's not just a boys' club of the new people coming in, there's got to be something more to it. That they're, like you said, they're still looking for something.
Let me go to Anonymous right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. I had a question about just trying to figure out how the land bank operates and why it came to disseminating property through nonprofits. As a licensed broker here in the city, why don't they just disseminate them through brokerages?
I think they're supposed to be auctioned off. Like any disposable government property is supposed to go to auction. So I think the land bank was designed that anyone, a broker, a nonprofit, a for-profit, could bid on the properties and obtain them the same way you bid on properties during a tax sale.
Well, why not just list them through a brokerage then, as opposed to operating through the nonprofit? Because it seems as though, I mean, this has been talked for years, actually. It seems as though it's prime for this sort of activity, you know, to have it the way it currently is with working through various nonprofits. Someone was going to do this, and I'm sure there probably had been others at some point.
You raised a good point. I think part of the whole idea of the nonprofits was particularly to work with the CDCs, the Community Development Corporations, to give them the opportunity to get the property, be able to, you know, build it back up, you know, sell it and help enhance or re-enhance the neighborhood. But obviously, in this scheme, this went out for allegedly greed. And again, allegedly, because they got to prove these charges in a court of law. But you made some good points, my sister. Let me go to Ron at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, Anders. How you going?
I'm fine, sir.
Okay. Now, you kept saying you just can't believe those two young men, you know, just done this alone. They didn't. You remember I always used to say, cherry pick Negroes? They were picked for that particular reason. And you best believe, at the end of the day, you're finna see the Temptations rejuvenate themselves, but they're gonna get to singing. Take my word on it. Later.
Oh, he's trying to say the Temptations. Well, it might be the Four Tops. Might not be the Temptations. Might be the Four Tops. Might be Lou Rawls. You never know. You'll never find.
And real quickly, Amos, when we're talking about the profits and non-for-profits, Emmett IBJ reported points out that the way the city handles it is that the for-profit companies come to the city and they will bid together for the, you know, to make money.
Right.
When the non-for-profits come, they will just bid for the lowest bid and they don't have to compete. When it's for-profit, there has to be at least two companies. Mm. But when there's profit, the way this scheme was set up, you give it, you hook up so-and-so, then I'll turn around and bring in that other company.
And what we don't know is, for example, the Indiana Minority AIDS Coalition has as one of their programs a housing program to be able to give individuals, you know, who contracted HIV or AIDS a permanent home, a place, you go reading from their website, a place to learn and practice the technique. So it seems like this is where the housing piece was going for the Indiana Minority AIDS Coalition, this other nonprofit, New Day Residential, and it's the first you're seeing. Mm-hmm. Some about this website doesn't give me great confidence. It's called newdaydevelopment.org.
And it doesn't look finished.
And yeah, it doesn't look finished. It's kind of like, I mean, it's nice. It's clean. The internet folks would say it's handsome. But in terms of what does it tell me what they do when I go to about, they ain't telling me much.
And one thing that strikes me is first thing I look for is a logo, and I don't see one on this website.
Let me scroll down. No, ain't no logo. No logo, no members of the key staff. They got phone numbers. Well, anybody can get a phone number. They say they work in inner city neighborhoods in Indianapolis, Columbus, and Atlanta. When I go to the photos, all I see is somebody's apartment before and after. That ain't showing me much.
Which could be anywhere. And one of the reporters asked, where are these properties? But there are so many that they don't even know yet where all of them are.
All right, here, development programs. Like I said, this New Day Residential Development just looks a little sketchy to me. And obviously, Indiana Minority AIDS Coalition, you know, has been around for 11 years, since 2002. And it's just a tragedy. They've got a great board. It's just a tragedy that their executive directors get caught up. We'll hear more about this on the program tomorrow. Because this thing, you know, it ain't ending. But if you just tuned in, five individuals have been indicted on a number of charges involving bribery and wire fraud. And what wire fraud basically means, if you've done the fraud over the internet, over text messages, or over the telephone, that's called wire fraud, going back to the days of the telegraph, and bribery to facilitate a number of fraudulent land purchases. Included in those indicted is Reggie Walton, the assistant administrator of abandoned properties for the Department of Metropolitan Development. He oversaw the land bank, also assisted by another employee of the Department of Metropolitan Development. And then others indicted include the executive director of the Indiana Minority AIDS Coalition, another individual in another nonprofit called New Day Residential Development, and then someone else who's involved as the resident agent of a for-profit corporation called Naptown Housing Group, and we still are looking for that website. We'll have more of this on our website at praiseindy.com, and in the morning you can hear Cameron right here, and he'll have the information right?
Starting at 6 a.m. Starting at 6 on Yolanda Adams.
On Yolanda Adams Morning Show. Cameron Riddle, thanks very much for helping us out. I'm Amos Proud. We'll see you tomorrow live at 1.